T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, come on. We got to make some blues history today. It's too early for the Blues to head for the links with their golf clubs, right? Well, we'll have every glorious second of your Blues playoff game coverage coming up at 1:30 today when the pre-skate starts right here on News Radio 1120 KMOX. We've got to do it today. So until 1:30 today, we've got a great lineup for you. My name is Clint Hosse, and I am in for this special edition of At Your Service. Now, here's what's on tap for this afternoon between now and 1:30. In a few minutes, we'll introduce our first guest, who I think you know, and we'll talk to her about her life, her career, and she's going to perform some live music for us in the studio today. More on that in just a couple of minutes. Then, moving ahead just after 1 o'clock, we will visit with the founding member of the Byrds and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. He's been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. Yes, twice. And I'm referring to our guest, superstar David Crosby. I had a chance to catch up with David earlier this week. He's a complex personality, and we had some fun. So you'll hear that just after 1 o'clock. And he's going to be here in St. Louis performing a concert at the Sheldon Concert Hall on May 15th. And then in between, in about a half hour, we'll be speaking with two experts on vinyl records. If you're into vinyl or you think you'd like to get back into vinyl, wait until you meet our guest today. Together or even individually, they probably know more about vinyl than anyone in the world. Joe Schwab, owner of Euclid Records right here in St. Louis and New Orleans. And then also Chad Chasm. Like Joe Schwab, he has a reputation of being a serious audiophile pioneer. And Chad is associated with the Beatles, believe it or not. His company pressed the Beatles' remastered vinyl version of Sgt. Pepper's in 2017. And then last year, his company pressed the remastered vinyl version of the Beatles' White Album. And they'll have some solid tips for you on how you can start exploring the wonderful world of vinyl. So turn it up, sit back, enjoy, and we're going to visit with our first guest in just a moment.
When news breaks out, KMOX breaks in. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. Depend on it.
I am so excited about introducing my guest today, musical artist Erin Bodie. You've heard Erin Bodie and her ensemble on Prairie Home Companion. We're going to ask her a few things about that. You've seen her on the CBS Second Cup Cafe, CBS Early Show, Fox News and Fox and Friends, and many, many other programs. Maybe you've seen her perform live. She and her husband, Sid Rodway, are part of the 442s. I want to talk about that. But Erin Bodie, welcome to the Voice of St. Louis, at your service.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. So let's go back. I want to ask you about your beginnings. You're the daughter of a Minnesota Lutheran minister.
That's right.
And that almost sounds like a sketch for Prairie Home Companion.
It's pretty funny because I grew up, obviously, in Minnesota listening to that show every Saturday night. And we always had homemade pizza on Saturday nights, and we would listen to that show while we ate dinner. And so I have such incredible family memories of that show. I don't think my parents were ever more proud of me than when I got to be on Prairie Home Companion twice.
Right.
It was really great.
How did it happen? How did you happen to, I guess the Minnesota connection had something to do with
actually,
it.
Well, actually, I don't think that it did. I think what happened was, you know, when Garrison Keillor was, you know, the voice of the show and a creator, he would come to each city, and I think he would sort of, you know, take a poll or kind of, you know, ask the local musicians or radio personalities, who should I have on the show? And so I think that's how it happened, actually. I think he was asking around, and because we were, you know, working all the time here in St. Louis, I think my name came up, and for whatever reason, they selected me. So I was really, really honored and thrilled. But I remember the phone conversation I had with him. It was very odd because I was in a meeting with some, doing some production on something I had done recently, and I got this phone call, and I was wondering if it was from the show because I knew I was going to be on it, but it was just a few days before the show. And I picked up the phone and it was Garrison Keillor. So I was like, oh my goodness. And I couldn't help myself. You know, I don't meet a lot of famous people, so I don't have like a rapport really set up to deal with it. So when he started asking me some questions, I just kind of like unloaded, like, I grew up listening to your show. I'm such a huge fan. And, you know, I'm like, all this stuff. And he seemed minimally interested in all of that. It was more like, okay, what are we going to sing?
You know? Right.
So, but it worked out really well.
Did you see the movie when it came out?
I saw it once, yeah. I think I watched it on a plane one time.
So when you went and did the show, and I guess one of the shows was here in St. Louis at the Fox Theater.
Both of them were.
Both
yeah,
of them
the
were,
Fox,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it anything like the movie?
The movie is very stylized. This movie's sort of bizarre, isn't it?
It is.
Sort of like a fantasy
it's
version.
It's like the main players on Prairie Home Companion are kind of the support people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting movie. But, you know, there is sort of a, I would say because of Garrison Keillor's personality, there is a little bit of mystique with that show. Something I noticed that, you know, because, you know, you go ahead of time and you rehearse with him. He doesn't really talk to you at all during the rehearsal process. You just stand on stage at your time for practicing. You do what you're going to do, and he doesn't give you much feedback at all. It's just, okay, we're moving on to the next thing. So the experience happens during the show. That was one thing that was very interesting to me. I really didn't talk to him at all before the show. And during the show, we interacted quite a bit. And then afterwards, you know, I did get to spend some time with the cast and crew and everything, and him a little bit too, and talk to him. But for the most part, it was just it was about the performance. The show was the event. Mm-hmm. And there's something really kind of special about that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, well, he must have loved you because he had you on twice.
I would like to think so, but I don't know. It was really fun. I'm really honored that I got to do that.
So tell us how you got to St. Louis. You went to Webster University. Is that what brought you here?
Actually, my dad, because he's a pastor, he was a pastor for like 20-some years in Minnesota while I was growing up. And he did get a job offer here in St. Louis in 1993. So we moved here. I was in high school. We moved here, and he was only here for 3 years. And after those 3 years, he then took another church back in Minnesota again. So now he's at a different church in Minnesota. So I had 3 years here during high school. I did, after graduating, go to the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis for 2 years. So I started out there. But having met so many people in St. Louis during high school, I knew about Webster University, and looking for like kind of a smaller school experience, I did a transfer. So I transferred back here, and then I've just been here ever since.
And you teach, by the way, you were telling me.
I do. I've since been able, in the last couple of years, been able to teach a couple classes at some universities around St. Louis. Missouri Baptist, I'm their artist in residence. And then at Webster University, I've been teaching lyrics writing. They have a new songwriting major there, which is very cool. It's very cool. And lyrics are just kind of a passion of mine. I really get into them, you know, just as a listener. Mm-hmm. And it's always a quest to write good lyrics, but to talk about it with students who are really pursuing songwriting is a total joy.
So tell us a little bit about how you describe your music. I mean, I've read how people describe you, but I'd like to hear it from you, how you describe your music.
Wow. You know, I'm not, I've never been the kind of person that that sort of sets out to define myself in a broader sense. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I kind of sort of live in the moment when it comes to making music and sort of let whatever comes out come out. You know, what I've been listening to recently, or you know, if I'm drawing on an experience, what is the appropriate sound for that experience? And so while my background, I mean, I studied classical music all through college and then just started getting into jazz sort of toward the end of my junior year at Webster. And so I definitely have a background in jazz, having studied it somewhat in school. But I grew up listening to musical theater, to a lot of folk music, a lot of classical music. And so I think what comes out tends to be sort of like in the jazz, singer-songwriter, pop, folk vein. Mm-hmm. it's a few too many things to draw on to really say this is what it is. So that's where I'm at. I'm sorry, that wasn't a very helpful answer.
Well, how do you feel about the J word, jazz?
I mean, I have such the utmost respect for jazz. And I think, especially when you're trying to be part of that genre, I'm mildly intimidated by it in a lot of ways, just because of the incredible artistry that has happened in that genre. And so I know where I fit into it and I know where I don't. And so I kind of hesitate to call myself a jazz musician, mostly because I think about what other jazz musicians, like the real jazz musicians, what their interpretation of what I would do.
That's the voice of Aaron Bodie on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX, on this special edition of At Your Service. I want to reintroduce you, if you just tuned in. We're with Aaron Bodie, vocalist extraordinaire here in St. Louis. Would you sing something for us?
Yeah,
right,
I can
here
do
in
that.
Studio?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
We'd love to hear something.
Yeah.
Here's Aaron Bodie.
Well, I've been out walking. I don't do too much talking these days. Oh, these days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do for you. And all the times I had the chance to. Well, I stop my rambling. I don't do too much gambling these days. Oh, these days I seem to think about how all the changes came about my way. And I wonder if I'll see another highway. Oh, these days. Now if I seem to be afraid to live the life I have made in song, it's just that I've been losing so. Things are bound to be improving these days, one of these days. These days I sit on cornerstones, count the time in quarter tones to ten.
my friend. Please don't confront me with my failures. I have not forgotten them.
Wow, that is so beautiful, Aaron. Aaron Bodie is our guest here on The Voice of St. Louis, At Your Service, the Jackson Browne song these days. That is so beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
You know, the times that I've seen you perform, there's something about it, and we just experienced it right now in this studio. There's just this focus and control. Mm-hmm. And intensity. I mean, you are 1,000% into what you're doing.
Thank you.
It's so cool to see.
Well, these, I mean, especially, you know, this song in particular was one I knew I wanted to record for this album. And there's just something incredible about it. The story that it's telling, the sentiments and the emotion that Jack, you know, he wrote this when he was 16 years old.
I did not know that. That's
amazing. It's just an incredible thing. A lot of people have wondered, like, how did somebody so young have the wisdom? Because there's so much wisdom in the song. And it really kind of sums up some of the thoughts and feelings that I've had over the years about life and music and work and all of those things. And it's just so succinctly put into one piece of music. And I really love this one.
So beautiful. I read in preparing for our get together today that you have perfect pitch.
You read that?
I read that.
It's not true.
No. Okay.
But let's pretend that it is.
Okay. Maybe you have relative pitch.
That's possible. I don't really know the exact definition. What I find is sometimes, especially if I've performed certain pieces of music, I can go right to it and sing it right in the right key. But I don't think of things in actual pitches. So maybe that's relative. I don't know.
Well, it's in writing and it's on the internet. Okay. It's got to be true. So we'll go with it.
We're going with it.
Okay. Now, in the piece that we just heard, we heard some beautiful string music, you have your ensemble, but you and your husband, Sid, are also, you perform with the 442s. Tell us about that.
Yes. Let's see. I can't even remember exactly what year the 442s formed. It's been several now. But I have for a long time over the years worked with a pianist and composer Adam Manis, who's a staple here in St. Louis. And he and my husband, we were all in a group together for a long time, over 10 years. And they, we've always had such wonderful relationships with musicians around town and have had the great opportunity over the years to work with several members of the St. Louis Symphony. And so I think in some of the projects that Adam and Sid and I have done together, where we've arranged music for like jazz standards and things for strings, we got to meet Bjorn Ronheim, who's one of the cellists in the St. Louis Symphony, and Sean Weil, a violinist from the symphony. And those four just kind of hit it off right away, and they loved working together. And so they formed a group called the 442s, which has a couple references and a couple meanings. They would rehearse at our house all the time, and we live at 442 Oak Street.
Perfect.
And yeah, it's perfect. And then, of course, the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra and most orchestras tune to 442, A442. It's the frequency they tune to. So it was just kind of a very appropriate title for their group. And they play music most. The majority of their music is composed by Adam. And then they've done some arrangements of things as well. But he's written a few songs for me to sing with the group. And I always enjoy getting invited to sing with them. We just did a concert last Thursday at the Sheldon.
So. That's right. I wanted to ask you about that. You released a new album, or is it a new album or one that was existing on vinyl?
Well, so that concert was a couple weeks actually prior to last Thursday. But my most recent record that we just heard these days from is an album called Here and Now. And I had the wonderful opportunity to work with producer and bassist Victor Krause for this record.
For those that don't know, that's Alison Krause's brother.
That's right. He's also been playing with Lyle Lovett for over 25 years.
That's right, yeah.
And he plays with everybody. I mean, he just recorded with James Taylor. He's played with Sean Colvin. Name somebody he's probably played with mm-hmm. them. So it was an honor to get to work with him. And he and I are working on a future project together now, too. But I also got to work with one of my singing icons, Suzanne Cox, who's a member of the Cox family. And I first heard her music back in the late 90s, but she and her family were featured in the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And when I heard her voice the first time on that soundtrack, it was just, it blew my mind. And she was like it for me after that. And I had the chance to meet her a few years ago, and she offered to sing on my next recording. So she's sort of the reason that I made this last record.
What's a jazz singer like you doing hanging out with these bluegrass people?
Having the time of my life? Yeah. I don't know.
Good music is good music.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think that's the other thing about Aaron Bodhi is that you are really beyond category. I really believe that. How do you feel when people compare you to Norah Jones? That's another thing I've heard people say. I don't really fully get that, but I mean, I can see that you're kind of in the same school in a way.
Sure. Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that, because I also don't really see the real similarity. But, you know, when I first heard her, I'm a big fan. And when I first heard her, I thought to myself, now that makes so much sense. Like, she sounds great. She has such a distinctive style. And so to be compared to her, to me, is very flattering. I appreciate it.
That's Aaron Bodhi. I'm Clint Hosse, and you're tuned in to At Your Service on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
News at the top and bottom of the hour, mornings and afternoons, KMOX.
Clint Hosse back here with Aaron Bodhi in the At Your Service studios on the Voice of St. Louis. Here's what I want to know, Aaron. Of all the songs you've written, your catalog, what would you say, what percentage are original pieces?
We've made three albums of primarily original music. The rest of our albums have usually contained some original music. And for many years, I worked with Adam Maniss, and we wrote all of these songs together in varying roles. So sometimes I would bring lyrics or a melody, maybe, you know, some song structure, and then vice versa. So we just kind of collaborated in every capacity in writing these songs together. And I recently started writing quite a bit with Victor Krauss. So, a lot of my music has been original. I've made two albums that are mostly covers. So this Here and Now album, my most recent, is all covers, mostly because I spent all those years doing original music, and I had this growing list of songs that meant so much to me that I really wanted to record, and so I had to find the right outlet for it. So I did in this recording. I'm so proud of it.
Would you do another song for us?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Where has the time all gone to? Haven't done half the things we want to. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time. This day was just a token. Too many words are still unspoken. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time. Just when the fun is starting, comes the time for parting. Let's just be glad for what we've had and what's to come. Too many words are spoken. Are still unspoken. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time. There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is racing. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time.
That's Aaron Bodie on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX, at your service. Our in-studio guest, yes, she just sang that live for you. What's the name of that song?
It's called Some Other Time, and it's just an incredible song. It's Leonard Bernstein wrote it with Comden and Green, and it's from the musical On the Town. And I was doing a lot of song searching for this album because I had a really long list, but I needed, there were a few pieces, a few elements that I hadn't quite put in place. And so this is a song that I found in the few months before recording the record. And when I heard it, I was, oh my goodness, this song. And so I actually mentioned it to Matt Munisteri, who's the guitarist you're hearing on that.
That's pretty good company too.
He's incredible, incredible. And I mentioned it to him. He's like, oh, you mean the best song ever? And I said, yes, we're going to do that one.
Wow. Yeah. And that's from the new album?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And just for people that might want to buy your album, where could they find it?
Yes. Well, it's, of course, available online on iTunes. You can download it and Amazon Music and that sort of thing. You can buy a copy, obviously, of the CD from our website. You can buy it anywhere we play live. It's in a few stores around town. And the new vinyl album is obviously available anywhere I am in person.
Yes.
And you can get it at Euclid Records in Webster Groves.
Nice.
Yeah. It'll probably be in some other stores, too. I'm actually shipping it out to a few shops around the country as well. But right now it's at Euclid, so go check it out.
Yeah. I want to ask you about performance. You have said before that St. Louis is a great town for live music.
It is. It's very unique, actually. And I've, you know, in getting to work with musicians from all over the country and some from not even the United States, it's interesting to hear people's hometown stories, what their own musical environment is, where they live. And, you know, having grown up in Minnesota, it's a very different arts culture. There's a thriving and strong arts culture in Minneapolis, but it's different from St. Louis. St. Louis has this, you know, everybody calls it a big small town, right? I mean, but that makes so much sense in this particular context because St. Louis is a place where everybody has the places they love to go. They are very at home here. People return here, even having lived somewhere else. It's a very community or oriented place, and people take pride in their neighborhoods and their small communities within the city. And I think is a real nurturing environment for musicians, because we can go, I mean, I've told people we can go play, we could play five nights a week in a different part of town and we'd have an entirely different audience, because people love to support their local spot. And there are lots of venues that support musicians. I mean, that's why I was able to get started, because I was a college student studying classical music, and I decided I wanted to do jazz. So one of my teachers at Webster University was so kind. She saw something in me and she just invited me to play on her gig at the Missouri Athletic Club. She did it every Friday and Saturday, I think. She's like, you're going to come and you're going to sing and I'm going to play piano and you're just going to try this out and see how it goes. And I did. And it was so intimidating and scary. But once I did it, I realized I could do this for a living. And so I just went with it, and I went around town. I had made a little demo. I went around to different venues that had music on a regular basis, and I just gave them my music and I said, I want to play here. And the first place that took us on regularly was Brandt's in the Loop, which is not there anymore.
That was a great spot.
It was a great spot. I played there every Saturday probably for like 3 or 4 years. And that's one of the places where I got my start, because people could come and hear me regularly, and I got a lot of other gigs out of that, and I ended up getting a record contract and just all kinds of, you know, because of the supportive nature of venues in St. Louis. And not every city is so committed to having regular local music, and then once you're doing your thing, they keep coming. I feel very, very blessed to live in a city that supports its musicians so well.
So you're really living proof. I'm sure you've had people say to you, why don't you move to New York or L.A. or Nashville, one of the music hubs. But you're living proof that you really can be successful in the music business. And I know that you've had lots of exposure in those major cities and done different things, television programs and concerts and so on. Mm-hmm. But that's really fantastic that you can kind of make it in, quote unquote, your own hometown.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I can, excuse me, be a professional musician and have this much work to do in one place is really incredible. And I've had other musicians tell me that this is a really special thing to have this kind of community to work within. But yeah, it's I do try to spend as much time as possible in some of those other major markets. Like I spend a great deal of time in Nashville now, working with different musicians, and that's been really rewarding too. But I feel like it's an investment in a lot of things, and I can take that back here. You know, the concert that I did 2 weeks ago for the release of this album, I brought everybody in from around the country. So I brought Suzanne Cox from Louisiana, I brought Victor Krause from Nashville, and I had Matt Ministeri from New York City, and just being able to bring that to St. Louis is a real thrill as well. So,
and you've got a couple of dates coming up at the Monocle Emerald Room. Tell us about that room. I haven't been there.
Well, I don't think it's been around for a terribly long time. It's a very nice, intimate venue, though. We've played there one other time, and I was incredibly impressed. It's in the Grove, and it's a very small room, so if you don't have your tickets yet, you might want to get them, because it tends to sell out just because of its intimate setting. But the sound in there is incredible. I was actually kind of blown away, because I didn't know what to think, but I thought, oh, it's a small room, it'll sound fine, you know, whatever. But their sound guy, James, is awesome, and the system they have in there is ideal for the room size. And I had an exceptionally good time there because of how well I could hear myself and how I knew it sounded in the room. So just if you're interested in great sound, you should come see us there.
Yeah, Aaron is doing two nights at the Monocle Emerald Room in the Grove, and that's May 17th and May 18th.
That's
and
right.
What is that, like an 8 o'clock start time?
Maybe we should look online for that, because actually we're doing two shows on Friday and one on Saturday. So, you go to aaronbodie.com. I've got it there.
Okay.
So.
Well, this has really been delightful to get to know you and have our listeners get to know you. And I know a lot of people already are aware of you and love your music, mm-hmm. but there may be some people out there that aren't familiar with Aaron Bodie. So I hope they got a lot out of this. I certainly did.
Well, thank you so much. Again, it's just been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Aaron. I hope we can do it again.
Let's do it again. That'd
and
be great.
Maybe have some of the other band members come in next
time. Oh, please. Yes, that'd be great.
That's Aaron Bodie. And this is At Your Service on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This girl, they seen a next door neighbor. Like,
do you love vinyl records? Do you enjoy the whole ritual of placing an album on the turntable and experiencing the warmth of vinyl? How about shopping at that record store or finding the mint condition Van Morrison album at an estate sale? Are you revisiting the chapters of your life through your record album collection? Well, if that sounds like you or you'd like to become that person, wait until you meet these two guys. We're going to visit with Joe Schwab. He has two record stores, one in St. Louis and one in New Orleans. His stores have been heralded as being one of the top five record stores in the world. How about that? We also have on the line Chad Chasm. He's with us, and he's the founder and owner of Acoustic Sounds and Quality Record Pressings in Salina, Kansas. Chad has the reputation as well of being a serious audiophile pioneer. In 2017, his company pressed the Beatles' remastered vinyl version of Sgt. Pepper's. And then last year, they remastered the vinyl version of the Beatles' White Album. We'll hear more about that in just a second. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, how you doing?
That's Chad. Joe, are you there as well?
I got a text from Joe that he got cut off. So
okay, we're gonna try to get Joe back on the line. Chad, you're actually in Louisiana right now, and
actually, I got back. I've been in Louisiana, and I wish I was still there, but I'm back in Kansas.
Okay. You're in Salina, Kansas. Tell us the story while we're waiting for Joe, hopefully, to join us, about how you became involved in pressing a couple of the Beatles albums. How does that happen?
Well, it doesn't happen overnight, I can tell you that. I mean, it takes a... you know, you have to build a reputation, man, you know, one day at a time and become one of the best pressing plants in the world. And then, you know, after dealing with them for so long, Universal owns the Beatles, owns EMI now. And so and Capitol Records. So we've been pressing, you know, all the Rush for them, all the Tom Petty, U2, the whole KISS catalog. And after doing that for almost 10 years, I guess they know our quality is up to the Beatles standard. And so that's how it happens, you know, just long relationships, building long relationships with the label and them knowing that your quality is up to the highest standard, you know. And that's so when they get a chance to they need to press these records, they want to go to the highest quality possible. And so they came to us for that.
That's amazing. And you did KISS as well, you said.
Yeah, we did. I think there's 35 different KISS albums. We did them all.
Wow, that's impressive. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is what is actually, what is involved in the process of pressing a record? What is that, for people that may not know, what does that mean to press a record? What happens? Tell us about that process. Are you still there, Chad? I guess we're having some technical difficulty. Joe, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
I'm so sorry for the technical difficulties.
No problem.
Joe is here, owner of Euclid Records. He has a store here in St. Louis and Webster Groves and one in New Orleans, which correct. I have been to, which is a phenomenal store. Your stores are rated like in the top five record stores in the world. Tell us what is so attractive about vinyl? I mean, people may be out there listening and thinking, why would I want to do that? I've already been through that.
Well, you know, I think it's a tangible product that you can put in your hands. You can look at the artwork. You can read the liner notes. The rich sound of a really nice pressing is great. And for me, personally, and I think a lot of people feel this way, 20 minutes on a side of music is just perfect. It tells the story really nicely. So when an artist comes up with an album, they have a concept in mind, and they have a particular order and song sequence that they want to be heard in. And you really get that whole the whole story of the artist in a 20-minute side. And then, you know, you deal with that, and then you deal with the other side, which is a whole nother story or maybe a continuation of it. So, you know, that's really, I think we lost that a bit with CDs. You're talking about maybe 70 minutes of music, and you definitely lose it with the digital as well. So, I find it great, and I love the fact that people are rediscovering it, and we've got younger people that are discovering it now.
Well, Joe, we're going to send people over to Euclid Records because you can help them out with all this and get them started on the right path of how to get the right turntable and get back into this. And I want to thank you and Chad for joining us just for a couple of minutes. Again, sorry about the technical difficulties, but hopefully we can do it again sometime. And thank you so much. I love your stores, and go by and see Joe today.
Yeah, buy and sell, and we have a sale going on today. So
love it.
Perfect. Perfect day to come out. It's beautiful.
It is. Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Chad. Very excited about introducing our next guest. Founding member of the Byrds, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, member of Buffalo Springfield. He's worked with the likes of Carole King, Joni Mitchell, Elton John, James Taylor, Phil Collins. The list goes on and on and on. Inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. And has the greatest mustache ever. David Crosby, welcome to At Your Service on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, man. I can't really take credit for the mustache. It just appeared there. I didn't really plan on it. And I wasn't really in the Springfield, man. I was in the Byrds.
What did I say?
Springfield.
Oh, okay. I thought you played with them for a period. So
I did, yeah, but I wasn't in the band.
I see. Okay, gotcha. Do you recall the last time you were in St. Louis, David?
No, but I mean, you know, I've been there and played there many times.
Yeah. Did you ever play the Sheldon Concert Hall?
Don't know. Played so many thousands of places, man, I can't remember them all.
Yeah, you sure have. I mean, you have performed at truly historical concerts, Monterey, Woodstock, Altamont, Live Aid. What are you most proud of in your career?
My children.
Yeah.
No, I'm proud of a lot of the work that I've done, man. I think CSN did good work. I think CSNY did good work. I think CPR did good work. I like the Crosby Nash records. I think I've done a fair amount of good work. I think the last four records that I made. They're with these two bands that I've got now. Cross, which was produced by my son, James Raymond, and then Lighthouse, which was produced by Michael League, and then Sky Trails, which was produced by James Raymond, and then Here If You Listen, this last one, which was produced by Michael League. And those two bands have been stretching me really. They're all young guys and women, and I have to paddle faster just to keep up, man. It's really good for me.
Well, the concert that's going to take place at the Sheldon on May 15th, it's billed as an evening with David Crosby and friends, and one of those friends is your son, James Raymond, who you just mentioned.
Yeah, yep. And James is the producer for the Sky Trails band, and he's also my co-writer on probably more than anyone else. I've written with James more than anyone else in my life, and he's a brilliant writer and a player. And then that band is descended from CPR, which was Crosby, Pivar, and Raymond. So it's James and I, and then Jeff Pivar, and then Mylise playing bass, and then Steve Stanislaw, who's David Gilmour's drummer, playing drums, and then Michelle Willis is in both of my bands. She sings the top harmony and she plays keyboard. She's really good.
So it's a pretty big ensemble we're going to see when you come here.
Yeah, it's the bigger of the two bands, and it's electric. And we play probably half, you know, old stuff, Deja Vu, Guinevere, Long Time Gone, Wounded the Ships, all that stuff, and half new, brand new stuff.
Love it. Can't wait. The reason I ask you about the Sheldon Concert Hall, if you haven't played there before, I was interviewing Rodney Crowell, who you may know, a month ago, and he's actually performing tonight as we record this this interview at the Sheldon Concert Hall. And he's played there before, and he described it as being like on the inside of an acoustic guitar. The stage is just so lively. I think you'll really like it.
Oh, boy. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Tell us the story, if you would, about how you reconnected with your son, James Raymond, if you could kind of set that up for us.
Oh, it's a good story. Here's how it worked. His mom put him up for adoption when he was born. He was raised by a very, very sweet couple. When he got married and when he was about to have his first child, his parents said, well, you're going to have a kid. You should know what the genetics are. You should know who your actual birth father is, if you want to. And he said, yeah, I'd like to know. So I've been wanting to find out who he was. I knew he existed, but you can't track from the parent down. You can only track from the kid up. So finally, he did, and then he found out it was me, and then he got a hold of me, and he did the most wonderful thing, man. Normally, those meetups go badly because somebody brings too much baggage. It's like, how come you left me and Mom? We weren't good enough for you, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And it doesn't happen. They just butt heads and then walk away scarred. He gave me a chance to earn my way into his life and be a friend and a father and a buddy and a co-musician and a co-writer. And that's a very generous cap to do that, man. That's a very sweet thing to have done.
That's got to be so rare in these
instances. It is rare, and it's really, really good. It's really an elevated approach to the thing. So I love him for that.
If you just tuned in, our special guest is David Crosby. We're visiting with David. He's going to be in St. Louis on May 15th. David, you've had some pretty defining moments in your life. And people have read about this. You had a liver transplant, heart disease, diabetes. You're 78 now. First of all, how is your health?
77, and it's good.
77, sorry.
Doesn't make any sense at all. It's completely backwards. I'm pretty healthy, and I'm very happy, and I'm singing as well or better than I ever have. So at least that's what my friends tell me. So
well, it sure sounds
I'm
like it on the recordings. But you've
Thanks,
had
man.
These defining moments, and one thing I would like you to tell the story, and I know you told the story before, but you did 9 months in a Texas jail for drug-related charges, and
mm-hmm.
you ended up writing the judge a letter thanking him.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
Well, going to jail is a bitter pill. It's really hard. It means you screwed up, and I did, and the thing that happened, though, was wonderful. Because I got locked up, it got me off of hard drugs. And I'd been trying to do that for quite some time and hadn't been able to. But when you do it in there, you don't have any choice. You know, you're locked up, period. That's it. So I wrote him and I told him, listen, I know that normally what you're dealing with is recidivism. You're dealing with people going right back to the same mistake. And I said, I see that all the time, and you see it all the time, and I wanted you to know that this time what you did worked. I'm sober. I'm happy. I'm going to meetings. I'm with my wife, and our lives are changed and very, very good, and I wanted to thank you for it.
I wonder if he ever received a letter like that before in his career.
I don't know, but he was moved by the letter that he got.
Now, there's a documentary that I understand has been released on your life called Remember My Name, and it's billed as an unvarnished look at your life. Tell us a little bit about that, and where can we find it? Where can we see it?
It will be out and in theaters. Sony Classics has got it. What happened is that Cameron Crowe, you know who he is, right?
I read about this and I saw him through that, but I did not.
Okay, he's the guy who directed
that.
Almost Famous.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, him.
Right.
Okay. He started out writing for Rolling Stone when he was 15 years old. That's when he met me. He came on the road with us. I liked him a lot. I talked to him very freely. So he's known me ever since then. And he's the one who asked the questions. He produced this documentary, and he's the one who asked the questions. And because it was him, and because we had a really good relationship, because I trusted him, I was the most honest I've ever been, and he asked me the hardest questions I've ever been asked. So I think it's gritty, but I think it's very real, very unusually real, and that's good.
He must be the best person ever to do this, having known you since he was 15 years old. That's incredible.
He's a great guy, man, and he's a great director.
That's David Crosby. I'm Clint Hosse on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. I'm Clint Hosse on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. David Crosby on At Your Service. I want to talk to you about one of your passions, sailing. And you've apparently sailed since you were a kid. And I heard one time that you sailed from Mexico to Hawaii some 3,000 miles with just a sextant. That's the real deal.
Yeah, it's not that hard. You can do it.
Really?
You just have to learn it. It's a system, you know. It's a sextant and cables there's a system. It takes about 25 steps and you can do it. But you have to learn to take really good sights, and you have to have a radio to get the time so you know exactly to the second when you took the sight. That's part of the magic. But it does work. I hit Hawaii exactly where smack on, and I did it again going to Tahiti. It's not that hard, and back then we didn't have GPS, so it was the only way you could do it.
So you also sailed then, was that from Hawaii to Tahiti?
Yeah.
Wow. That is...
I sailed all over the Pacific and all over the Caribbean a lot.
That is, I don't know, that seems scary to me. I mean, when you're in Tahiti, I mean, you're out really in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I mean, that's serious.
Well, going to Hawaii from Mexico in the middle, I was 1,500 miles from the nearest land.
Wow.
But it didn't bother me. I was, you know, sailing a really good schooner, really well prepared with people who knew what they were doing, and it was fun. We had a blast.
And your sailboat is the Mayan?
The Mayan, yeah. Not anymore, though.
You mean you've given it up, or you have a different boat?
I had to give it up.
That sounds like something you'd miss terribly.
Yes. Yeah, it's bad. What happened, man, is the streaming doesn't pay us, and so that cut my income in half.
Yeah.
So I couldn't keep the boat up, and I can't let it go downhill in my hands because I love it. So I had to give it up.
Yeah, well, maybe things will change, but I guess in the music business...
I don't think so. Not with the streaming. Those people are making too much money. They're not going to change it. They're making billions. You know, the three main record companies that own the streaming services, or large parts of the streaming services, are making $19 million a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're not going to give it up. And nobody's going to change it. And it's bad enough for people like me who can sell some tickets, because that's the only way we make any money. But it's really awful for the young musicians trying to get started, because they can't make any money any kind of way. And it's a really screwing it up the music scene. It's a very bad thing. Streaming is very bad. They are stealing our music and making billions of dollars out of it and not paying us. It's like you worked for about 4 weeks and they paid you a nickel.
Right. Yeah, I guess the money is in performance in the music business, so they can't replace that.
Well, a lot
that,
less money, and that's why I lost the boat.
Yeah. Our guest is David Crosby, if you just tuned in here on The Voice of St. Louis at Your Service. I want to ask you a little bit about music. When you were growing up, What really, first of all, what inspired you to get into music when you first picked up a guitar?
Well, it was music all around me in my house. My parents used to play classical music in our house, and folk music, both. And they both affected me very strongly, and I always loved music right away. When I went to school, I started singing in choirs right away. So I liked singing. I'd been doing it at home.
And what kind of music were some of your earliest influences? I know you've talked about the Beatles, but I guess from more of a popular music standpoint, who were some of your greatest influences?
Well, the first big influence was classical music. The second big influence was jazz. Third big influence was the Everly Brothers. Everly Brothers got me hooked on singing harmony. And that's, you know, understandable. And then there were a ton of others, and the Beatles were very high up in there.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about in preparation for our get-together today, I read the story of how Miles Davis helped the Byrds get a recording contract at Columbia. Tell us about that.
It's the truth.
How does that work?
It's the truth. Well, at that point, Miles was a hero, right? He was the biggest musical guy in the country. And the people who were running Columbia were a bunch of failed shoe salesmen who had absolutely no idea what a song was or what music was at all. And didn't have a clue. So they went to Miles and they said, "Hey, Miles, we got this thing. These guys, they call themselves the Byrds. What do you think of this? What is this? What do we do with this, Miles?" Miles said, "Sign them."
It happened just the other day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.